Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello and welcome to a special show today for you, for we are joined by the voice of cycling, which of course can only mean one thing. It's the one and only Phil Liggett. Phil, welcome.
Well, the two Phils, Phil, nice to meet you.
Phil's mellow tones have guided our cycling fans through 47 Tours de France, and he still spends 250 days a year on the road following the pro circuit. I would like to spend the first part of this programme chatting about your early days, because I think for most people, the millions of cycling fans around the world who recognise your voice, and as soon as we hear your voice, we think about the Pyrenees and the Alps and those sort of those record-making moments in cycling. But I think what a lot of maybe new converts to cycling don't realise is that the time you've been in cycling, it hasn't all been about TV, has it?
No, it hasn't. In fact, my very, very first job was a zookeeper at Chester Zoo, and my ambition was to be a zoologist. There was no money in my family. I'm from the Wirral, which is really Liverpool, and very proud of the fact, and it's probably the only place I would go back and live. Obviously, I'm local to you now, Phil. I've lived down in Hertfordshire for, oh gosh, since 1967. So I wanted to be somehow involved with animals. It seemed to be the only way for me, but it wasn't to be. I couldn't go to university because mum and dad needed money in the family, and I needed to go out and earn money. And so I moved on from zookeeping to become an accountant, in fact. During that period of time, which was through to the early 20s, I was riding a bike. I started riding a bike, first of all, when I was 15 years of age. I very quickly wanted to be a racing cyclist. I rode my first bike race when I was in my last month as a 17-year-old. So I didn't have a young career at all. I came straight in as a senior rider at 18. And ambition was to be a professional. So the accountant came into my office when I was 23, 24 years of age. And he said, "Phil, you don't want to be an accountant, do you, really? You want to be a professional cyclist?" I said, "Well, it is my ambition." He said, "Okay, we'll keep your job for 1 year. Go to Belgium where you want to go and live and see if you can make the grade." I thanked him for his kindness, but I said, "Hal," his name was Hal, "I won't come back, but I'll always come back and say hello, because even to this day, I've never backtracked in my life. I've only gone forward." I got the pro contract, but at the same time, I was writing pretty much like you, I think, Phil, for a local newspaper, the Birkenhead News and the Bebington News, about the cyclists, and not getting paid for it, of course. And when I finished up in Belgium, I started continuing to write about the cyclists in Belgium, the professionals. Tommy Simpson is a world champion, etc. And the magazine I was writing for was a Fleet Street-based magazine. They offered me a job. And so I turned my back on the pro contract, took the job, hated the decision because I only wanted to be a professional cyclist. But it was the right decision. Had no ambition to become a radio or TV commentator. That followed on later years. And, of course, since then I've covered the Tour de France for, well, this year would have been my 48th, but we'll see if it happens now later on in August. But I think basically I am constantly stopped in the street by middle-aged men now who remind me how they followed my career on the tour from when they were born, literally 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years of age. They've all spoken to me, chatting me up, saying, telling me what they were doing, when and where. So I feel as though I've got a very large family throughout Britain who have watched television far too long.
Well, of course, it's not just Britain, is it? Because you are renowned throughout most of the English-speaking world, yes, and beyond, really. I know you're big in Australia and you're very big in South Africa, of course. And America, the Americans love you, and the list goes on and on. I'm going to take you back a little bit, though, to those early days, because I remember I am that demographic you were just talking about. And I remember as a teenager, the only fix we would get would be occasionally, when it came to like the big tours, would be your byline in a national newspaper or perhaps Cycling Weekly. And once a week would be our only taste of a continent which enjoyed cycling. Now, I remember in the 70s, you know, we were considered as cyclists, club cyclists. We were considered really, you know, weird people, weren't we? And to be fair, the clothes we wore at the time didn't help much, did they, with the woolly tops? How have you seen the transformation of cycling, you know, in your time? Because it was a Cinderella sport, wasn't it, when you started out?
Oh, totally. It's gone from the infamous cloth cap image, usually from a north of England person, and the very same way it developed in Europe. I mean, the farming peasants of France, for the kids in the fields, it was a way out. They saw bicycle races. They wanted to ride bikes. They became superstars. And Bernard Hinault, the five-time winner of the Tour de France, certainly claims to that. Yes, I think that the way the sport has developed was never foreseen by me. Obviously, I was a kind of a pioneer. A jack of all trades, because not only did I write about the sport, I raced still at the same time. I wrote stories about the races I was actually taking part in. Then I developed as a radio commentator because BBC asked me to do a 30-second report. Then ITV adopted me in 1978 under sad circumstances because the commentator at the time was killed in a car accident, David Saunders. And David and I were great friends. So they asked me if I would do the job. I said yes. Then CBS television in America saw me commentating on the Champs-Élysées and said, hey, come and work for us. And I said, I will, but only if ITV says I can, because they've been too kind to me. They agreed, so I was working for CBS. Then it spread to Commonwealth Games, Television New Zealand, Channel 9 Australia, and so it spread. And you're right, I've worked for every English-speaking network in the world, purely because I was the only one that did it. And I had a good following. I used to look at myself in the mirror, wonder why the fans liked me. But they did, and they just still do, thankfully, to this day, because I still work, of course, for NBC in the States and Channel 7 in Australia. So I've watched the sport develop, and I never thought I would see the day when suddenly we would cover every day of the Tour de France live. And that came about after I was covering the 1980 Olympic Games for ITV. I always finished up in the dining room at 11 o'clock at night in the hotel in Russia with Adrian Metcalf, who was a silver medalist in the Olympic Games, now the athletics commentator for ITV. And he one night over dinner, he said, hey, I think you should know there's a new television station starting, Channel 4, and they've asked me to be the commissioning editor for sport. He says, now, I want to pay you £200 a year to take all the males involved in cycling and just tell me the ones I should take an interest in and throw the rest away. And that's what he did. And so when somebody had a really good idea for television, I told him, and he tried to develop the idea. So when he got the job and he got it in full flow, his big ambition was to put the tour live on television for the first time in Great Britain. And I was still working for ITV on Saturday and Sunday, and it became Channel 4 Monday through Friday as well. And so it was a one-man show in France then. I sat at the commentary box in France, no producer, no director. They were all in London, no money. And the producer would tell me the pictures in London, saying, right, Phil, we're showing a picture of the tour now, go. And I would say something like, hello and welcome to the road of the Tour de France.
I remember that really well.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Sundays, wasn't it?
It was every day in the end for Metters, for Metcalf, Metters as we called him. They were very pleased with the viewing figures. It was only at 200,000, but that was the most they could record for the show. So it was popular. So along with Countdown, it really was the very first shows to go on television on Channel 4. The following year, they employed a production agency, and they really brought a lot of class to it. Then a couple of years after that, I chatted up Paul Sherwin, who was retiring from the sport. We were good friends, and I said, how about working with me on the tour? He took the job, they gave it to him, and we became the commentary duo for 33 years until sadly Paul passed away in 2018.
I think also your combo with Paul, that isn't that the longest relationship between a pairing of TV sports commentators?
Yes, Paul was very proud of it. In fact, he found the fact out and told me.
We'll chat about it a bit later because there was a certain magic between you and Paul. I'm going to take you back to those days in the Wirral because you very kindly, and I have to say you've been so generous with the time you've given me in prepping for this and the amount of correspondence we've done, but you very kindly sent me a list of a few of your favourite tunes, and I understand some of these are going to feature actually in a South African radio programme, which is their version of Desert Island Disc. Which I guess gives to listeners who are new to cycling the gravitas you have within the community and in the wider world. The thing is, though, it's the Beatles, Please Please Me.
Well, I'm a Liverpoolian. I've been to the Cavern. I remember the Beatles when they were called the Quarrymen, and I stood at the front. I wasn't a great dancer, but I loved their music. And my father at the time was a deep-sea cruise saloon steward on the first class of the Queen Mary. And in the old days, he used to sail out of Liverpool, and Dad would go away for up to 3 months and then come back from Australia and wouldn't tell me a thing. But I remember him walking into the house once, and Victor Sylvester was the conductor of the orchestra on the deep sea cruise liner. And Dad come back, he said, "Well, Victor says those bugs will go nowhere."
Yeah.
I said, "What are you talking about, Dad? What bugs?" "The Beatles," he says, "the Beatles," he says, they'll never go anywhere."
Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Last night I said these words to my girl.
So that, of course, was The Beatles. You're listening to Behind the Bike Shed here on Cambridge 105 Radio. And I'm delighted to say joining us behind the virtual bike shed anyway is Phil Liggett. And while that was playing, Phil, you said that... well, you were telling me about your other choice.
Yes, well, the Wirral Peninsula is a fabulous peninsula, particularly for training racing cyclists, because you can go right round the peninsula to Hoylake, West Kirby, Heswell, round towards Chester and come home to where I lived in Bebington. But 3 miles from my house, apart from passing the best football team in the world, Tranmere Rovers, you get down to the pierhead and you jump on the boat with your bike and you go across the Mersey on the ferry. And so, of course, Jerry Marsden, who made that great record, "Ferry, cross the Mersey, it's the place I know," that brought back great memories. Because once I crossed the Mersey, I would ride up to the bike shop, which was Harry Quinn Cycles, through Lime Street and out into the bush. At that time in the 60s, with the Flower Power, with the comedians that were falling out of Liverpool one after another, with the great bands that were being played, it was the best time to be young and alive.
I guess it's always good to be young and alive, isn't it, for anyone thinking about it?
Yeah, so that never come back.
From what I've heard from broadcasters and people who work with you on a almost monthly basis, you never say no, and also you really go out of the way, don't you, to make sure you can deliver?
Yes, because I feel I'm in the entertainment industry. I feel a TV commentator. You don't see your audience on television, so you have a right to feel extremely nervous when you speak at a dinner, or I do a lot of talks in cinemas as well and stuff, and you see about 800 people. But I feel you've got to make those people who are going to sit for 2 or 3 hours listening to just you, you've got to make them laugh. And I seem to see pictures. That's how I got my work in television, because I can look at the small screen and make a picture and not just bore you with the absolute cycling commentary. Because as I used to say to Paul Sherwin, I said, "Paul, look, when we work for every network in the world on the Tour de France, including doing the Tour de France's own private program, we were speaking per day to 150 million viewers. Now, I said to Paul, how many of those do you think are cyclists? I said, I doubt it's 10%. So don't let's bore them with the pants off them. Let's entertain them. So we used to talk about the chateau, the castles of France, the gardens, the mountains, the fact that they released the vultures in the Pyrenees and then they've released more in the Alps, give them the history. If I saw the bird fly through the lens, I tried to identify it. And suddenly, nowadays, with the social media, of course, the Twitter goes mad. And so I know what the people want. And I said, Paul, the one thing you must do is you've got to stop the old lady going and making a cup of tea until the adverts come along. And if you do that, you've made it. And that was always our target. So we've had a lot of time entertaining people, I feel, more than just giving them. Well, he's riding a 42.36 bottom gear, which is rather low, to get over the mountain. A one-off line, good for the enthusiasts. But, you know, I've always said the real enthusiasts who love the tour, they can turn the sound off and still enjoy the show. But the punter, normal punter, can't.
But actually, I always felt your commentary, the two of you, but the thing is, if you go on a cycle club run, you know, cycling is probably a third of a conversation and the rest is real world and where people come from. Because the great thing about cycling is you tend to get people from all walks of life, don't you? And they're from interesting walks of life. And, you know, how often is cycling mentioned on a club run? I would suggest a third of the time, and the rest of it, people are sharing information. And I think that's a great thing, isn't it? Because I guess you're a cycling fan. Do you still consider yourself a cycling fan rather than a cycling professional?
Yes, I probably do. I think I do, because I don't, when somebody tells me there's a show on cycling on TV, I don't go and rush to turn it on. It's usually my voice anyway, which can bore me. And what I would do is, I personally think they're showing too much cycling now. It's gone the complete other way.
Never.
Because a race that's 6 hours long and you're showing it from start to finish, that's not going to keep the audience. It's impossible to keep the audience. And the poor commentators having to think of falling over themselves to think they've got to speak to the pictures all the time. And so I personally, as a real enthusiast, would go in the garden and I'd come in for the last 50 kilometres and just watch that and I'd get the whole story. So I think they're overexposed in some quarters, cycling now, but don't escape the fact that it has become one of the most watched sports in the world now, around the world. And if there's any good to have come out of this horrible virus, COVID-19, it is the fact that cycling has blossomed out of sight. The British industry must be making a fortune, and good luck to them. They can't produce enough bikes. You can't buy the home trainers because they're out of stock. When I go out on my driveway here in Hertfordshire, the roads are full of bike riders. And you can always tell, I always call them New World cyclists. They're wobbling all over the place and I'm not paying attention. But it's good to realise that life must slow down. We don't want to continue burning up the atmosphere with all the cars.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
From your business's early beginnings to the day you shut your books for the final time, you're likely to need legal advice. Woodfine Solicitors offer bespoke legal solutions for every business scenario, from contracts to terms and conditions, intellectual property to debt recovery. The lawyers at Woodfines have a wide range of experience and can support you at every stage of your business's lifetime. We also provide employment advice support and advise on business startups or disputes. Your business will benefit from a team who are ready to listen to your position and who will advise with a tailored course of action. Our clients see us as more than just lawyers. We're business advisors who can help you find routes to see your business flourish. Listen again to us on Cambridge 105 Radio via our website and find out more at woodfines.co.uk. Read our articles in the Cambridge Independent or call us directly on Cambridge 411 421.
For the finest award-winning fish, chips and takeaway food in the local area at great prices, it's got to be Rumble's Fish Bar in Trumpington. Try our combination kebabs, tortilla wraps, or if you fancy a pie or burger, we've got a tasty range to choose from which will make your mouth water. We've also got a selection of food for the veggies. Our falafel, hummus and pita is a must. We're open Monday to Friday, 12 noon to 10 p.m. and Sundays 2 till 10. You can even order online for delivery using Deliveroo. Simply search for Rumble's Fish Bar and Kebab House, Cambridge. Rumble's Fish Bar, 2 to 3 Anstey Way, Trumpington. Call Cambridge 844050.
Cambridge 105 Radio is the home of Cambridge music.
Rock is actually a very broad genre. Rock has gone through many transitions, one of them being prog rock to metal, alternative rock. It's a very broad school of music.
Mike Hauser, presenter of Renegade Rock.
Some of the prog rock includes some symphonic elements with shifting timescales as well as orchestral instruments being implemented in the music itself.
Renegade Rock, Thursday at 9 p.m. on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Welcome back to Behind the Bike Shed. It's our special and we're here with Phil Liggett, the voice of cycling, and what a great honour it is to have Phil on board. Phil, you were saying during the break to me, we were talking about general cycling, sort of commuter cycling and cycling just for fun rather than cycling in Lycra. And it dawned on me, of course, I remember some of the bits you used to write, especially in towards the end of the 70s and the early 80s. You were really one of the probably people with the highest public profile who started to talk about cycling more as a means of transport than just the sporting side.
Absolutely. Let's not forget, Phil, that anybody who rides a bike, even if he's the finest professional in the world, like Eddie Merckx or Bernardino, Jacques Anquetil, they all started with one reason. They loved cycling, just as a mode of transport, and they had the talent to become great bike riders. But nobody gets on a bike to suffer like that and really worry about it. So, yes, you're absolutely right. Because I felt a responsibility of selling the sport and pastime, I emphasize and pastime of the cycling world, I had to tell people how to do it and what to do it. My next door neighbor was my best guide. She was very, very toffee spoken. And she would say, you know, I watch you on television, Phil. I really have got no idea what you're talking about. So I put her right and I explained that cycling wasn't just a bike race. It was a mode of transport. If you think of all the money you could save by just riding those couple of miles to work, at last, the cities and the towns around are making sure they think bike. I was 10 years in the end the president of the CTC, which is now called UK Cycling. And all my time was spent to encourage people to ride bikes. First of all, they reckon if you ride 5 miles a week, it adds 5 years to the longevity of your life. And I wouldn't doubt that for a start, because it increases your lungs. It's so kind to the body. You don't get injuries riding a bike. Whereas if you go running, you might get shin splints or hip problems. You get nothing on a bike, unless you fall off, of course, which is rather silly. So I would suggest that I felt like a pioneer, but I also felt a very big obligation. I found a very happy life. And I found it by riding a bike, first of all, through the Welsh mountains and from my home in the Wirral. And then as a racing cyclist, meeting people around the world. Then through television, where I met very important people and I've met very famous people. And they've all realized that there is another way in life rather than just go always to a car, always to the pub. And don't get me wrong, I do drink. I don't smoke, but I do drink. And the bicycle is a mode of transport and a pleasurable mode that can only be a win-win situation. And COVID, again, has proved that people should get out on the bikes more now and enjoy what we've got, which is the most beautiful country.
You know, speaking about the growth in cycling, sporting cycling, it's almost, it's just amazing, isn't it? And I know where, presumably where you live, I know the part of the world you live in, Sunday club runs, you must have seen a massive increase in what I'd call non-club cyclists, but who are still sporting cyclists.
Yes, in my day, of course, it was all about the cycling club on Sundays, leaving the house and rendezvousing somewhere at 9:30 and then going off into Wales, in my case, doing 100 miles, coming home and be absolutely tired for the rest of the evening. But nowadays, the internet cycle clubs have popped up, so they all arrange where to meet. And you see them going down the lanes here. But there's much more the style of, as it was in Europe, not so many cycling clubs as so much as groups of people, 6 to 10 people maximum. We don't see the big cycling clubs of the old days, I don't think. But that's all right. Everybody's riding a bike now. The coffee shops have blossomed, so everybody's finishing up in a coffee shop, making friends with each other. A lot of business is done. You know, golf clubs are closing down because of cycling, because the cyclists have found that this is now their golf, and they're getting very fit because of it. They've got money. They're usually people in the age bracket 30 to 50 years of age who are buying their first bikes, and they're not afraid to spend the money. And you can, I always try to tell them, buy a cheaper bike, make sure you want to do it before you spend £10,000 on the lightest of all bikes. Because you haven't got the experience to get the most out of that new bicycle you're just about to buy. But the key factor is get everybody on a bike to enjoy what they do. And cycling is, it makes me feel so happy when I get home. Fills me with oxygen. When I spoke a lot at dinners, I used to always go for a bike ride to write my speech, because I came back with the best ideas once you're riding the bike. Just riding along, thinking about what you're going to say. Same with my scripts, when I used to write scripts for television and stuff like that. Very important.
So that's food for thought there, isn't it, about the expansion of cycling? Of course, the other thing about cycling at the moment, you mentioned £10,000 bicycles, but, in some parts of the world, bicycles are rarer than toilet rolls at the moment.
Well, they are all over. I mean, the industry is blossoming now because they can't produce the bikes quick enough due to the new demand, which is good to see. It happened in the old days of rally industries when they relied on the first mountain bikes, and the old rally chopper saved the rally industry when sales dropped away for their normal production line. I do a lot of work on the African continent, so we get a lot of bikes for kids over there that are brought in called Bicycles for Humanity. I also do work with professional cycling team who provide bikes. They're called Quebecca Bicycles and Buffalo Bikes, and we give them out to all sorts of people, not just the kids. There's also the rangers who patrol the fence lines of the national parks. They used to walk those fence lines. Now they can cover the distance on a bicycle.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, we use bicycles as almost a luxury thing, but in reality, for a lot of people, it's the key to economic success. And I guess you see 100%. That across Africa.
100%. When you're working. Absolutely.
So what we're going to do now, Phil, is it's tradition when anyone comes onto Behind the Bike Shed. It's probably the most popular part of the show. Uh-oh. We are now going to play...
Let's play Spin That Wheel.
Okay, we're going to play Spin That Wheel. And it's quite easy. What we do is I shall play the music and you shall hear the bleeper start. You may well recognise it as the start to the time trial bleep on the Tour de France. You will have 3 minutes to answer questions about your cycling habits. And the great thing about this one is, Phil, you will get this right. You will win this because you know the answers before I do, okay?
Well, so, you haven't told me anything. You've dropped this one on me, so I'm looking forward to it, I think.
Well, I know, but this is a challenge because you are renowned for being the guy who can just get on a mic and talk and work it out as he goes along, okay? So okay. If you're ready, hopefully...
Asking me each individual question, are you?
I will do, yes. It will be self-explanatory. Right. You just answer the first thing which comes into your head, okay?
Right.
And by all means, with yourself, we'll probably only get, I should imagine, 3 questions through somehow. So it doesn't matter. Everyone's loving what you're saying. So here we go.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Spin that wheel.
Phil Liggett, here we go. Spin that wheel. What's your earliest memory of cycling, Phil?
Finishing last up in my very first road. No, second to last in the Leek road race up a steep hill. I swore I'd never ride that circuit again because it was too hard, and I never did throughout my career. I would have finished last, but the guy in front punctured 50 yards from the line, so I went past him.
Oh, yeah, it'll always be a last. It was usually me, to be honest. What type of cycling do you enjoy most these days? That's obviously in normal times.
Well, in normal times, I like to go out Tuesdays, Thursdays, maybe on a Saturday or a Sunday, but of course I work Sundays doing cycling reporting, but... If I can, my aim is to go out for a nice ride in the Hertfordshire lanes, touch the Essex borders, do around 45 to 50 miles, and I feel good when I get home.
Now, I reckon you must have a stable probably a dozen bicycles or so in your lifetime, I'd imagine. But of those bicycles, which ones do you currently pedal? And of those, which one is your favourite?
Well, Condor Cycles in London used to always look after me as a young amateur cyclist. I appreciated that. I've made friends of the family over the years. They built me a lovely bicycle about 5 years ago, which is a white Condor. And with all the latest, I called it my retirement bicycle. And so I ride that. But that tends these days to be strapped onto those indoor trainers. And I do that occasionally now. So I've got 2 other bicycles, one from Canyon, which is the all carbon fiber, and one from Specialized, which is an electric bicycle. But I've got to be honest, and I hope Specialized aren't listening, I haven't yet ridden it, and I've had it since December. Because one thing after another, especially being locked down in South Africa, as I have been during COVID, I haven't had a chance to ride it. But I just love riding a really nice bicycle nowadays. and just you feel so good. The bicycles weigh nothing now, so I can dance on the pedals, as I might say in commentary.
Yeah, and elegantly as well, you'd say it as well, wouldn't you? Now, what is your preferred manner for carrying stuff on your bicycle? Do you have a pannier? I don't suppose you have a basket on the front.
No basket. Of course, in my days of CTC, I did have a saddlebag and I kept everything in the saddlebag, and jolly useful it was too. You never feel you've got a bag on the back. It doesn't alter at all the way you ride your bike. Obviously, you wouldn't have it on the back if you were racing, but certainly would just for fun riding. But basically, I use a small backpack, and the small backpack is made for me by a little family I support in South Africa, where they make from local materials. And so I got her to make some mountain bike like camelbacks, where you just put it on your back and carries my computer or whatever.
Okay, now this question I must ask you before we get to the time. Oh, there you go.
Spin that wheel.
Well done, Phil Liggett. And unsurprisingly, you got all those answers right.
Yay. So,
we're assuming you're telling this truth anyway. There's a question here.
All my stories are truthful. I insist.
I'm sure
on
they
that.
Are. I was, yeah. Just very quickly, do you have a cycling hero? Just one.
Eddie Merckx. He's the reason I never turned pro. Eddie Merckx.
You raced against him, didn't you?
Yes, and I didn't beat him, and I never would. So we were never friends at the time because he was he's about 18 months younger than me. And in fact, he was 75 just a few days ago. So Eddie was a lovely man, but we became very close friends as the years unfolded. And I started to speak to him as a journalist. And I went to his home in Brussels and talked. And I said one day, I said, Eddie, do you realize you're the reason I never turned professional? Because I could never beat you. And he looked at me and he looked at my feet. He looked right up to my eyes and he said, you beat me. It was a question. I said, no, I never could. That's why I didn't turn pro.
It's a statement, wasn't it? Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to have your second piece of music, which I think has associations for you with what the milk race, which is obviously the precursor really for most people to the Tour of Britain. So your music, Phil, is?
Well, this is a wonderful piece of music. It's by Elgar. It's Enigma Variations. It's Nimrod. And the reason I love it so much, the Tour of Britain, when it was on ITV, it was which followed on from the milk race, the producer used to use this music as we said goodbye at night to a lovely scene set of the sights and sounds of the Tour of Britain rolling through the mountains of Scotland. And this is a beautiful work. Elgar excelled, I think.
Great choice of music, Phil. And of course, that you were mentioning, that was to do with the Tour of Britain. And something some people may not know about you is you have actually organised a lot of cycle events in your time, haven't you?
Yes, I have. And the big one for 22 years was the milk race. We called it the Round Britain Milk Race. The Tour of Britain followed, which was a professional event. The milk race was drawing huge crowds. It was organised by the Milk Marketing Board. I was paid by them. And of course, the farmers were the people that loved the milk race, to bring it into the countryside. But at the time, it was loved by the people. You know, even the miners, when we raced through the Welsh valleys, the miners would go down the mine at 2 o'clock. And the milk race was usually scheduled to pass through the mining villages around 2 o'clock. They didn't go down until they cheered the riders past, all in their mining gear with the helmets on, the lights, all ready to go down the shaft. But first of all, they saw the milk race go past. It caught the public imagination, and it was the precursor to everything that's happened since.
You're listening to Behind the Bike Shed. It's a special with Phil Liggett, the voice of cycling. We shall be back very shortly.
It's
hard to beat the satisfaction of cooking your own food outdoors on a hot grill. The smell, the sound, the flavour, and the excitement. It's just better. At Cambridge Barbecue, we source the finest quality ingredients from local suppliers and provide everything you need for a great barbecue direct to your door. Try our delicious tender skewers, tasty jumbo sausages, and big chunky homemade beef burgers. We've premium fish, vegetarian and vegan options, and probably the best halloumi you've ever had in your life. We even have the charcoal. We've been supplying great quality event catering for over 20 years in the Cambridge area, and now we can offer same-day delivery on orders received by noon. See our website at cambridgebbq.co.uk, where you can browse our range and pay online for a fully contactless delivery service. If you're looking for high-quality, locally produced delicious food, try Cambridge Barbecue.
Life isn't always easy at the moment. We can feel frustrated, miss loved ones, or get anxious. But there are simple things we can all do to look after our mental well-being at this time. Every Mind Matters will get you started with personalised tips and advice from the NHS. Whether it's dealing with stress, techniques to help you relax, or simple tips for better sleep, we'll help you find what's right for you. Search Every Mind Matters today.
I'm Chris Brown. Join me this Saturday evening between 6 and 8pm for a soulful start to your Saturday night, including an hour of classic soul and funk anthems, the best of the new releases, and all my usual features, including Soul Seduction, my Northern Soul Corner, a proper old-school house music anthem, not forgetting my featured artist. So that's the Soul and Dance Show this Saturday evening with me, Chris Brown, from 6, here on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Welcome back to Behind the Bike Shed here on Cambridge 105 Radio. And I'm delighted to say he's still with us. He's in very much in demand, but he's managing to stay by the Zoom for us. Phil Liggett, the voice of cycling. Phil, when we went to that break, it dawned on me that well, you mentioned the milk race. And yes. I still have a sticker, which I have here about somewhere, and it was a milk race sticker, and it was from the year Colin Chapman rode as a semi-pro, who was like our local hero. And I remember he brought that back and he gave it to me at the club run one evening, which was really good as a teenager. And another teenage memory I have, which is one I've carried with me forever, is the fact that as a teenager, my dad and I cycled down to Hartford, and then we took part, we're in Cambridge then, and we then cycled up to, I think it was Sandy Biggleswade direction, and we stopped to have our, as it was then, a bit of bread pudding or, you know, lump of cake in your back pocket your mum had made. And this chap came over to me and I was starstruck, and I must have been 12 or 13, because my dad's idea of a family cycle ride was 100 miles and you were probably warmed up by then. You came across and you spoke to me, and I've always remembered that. And I think it says something about the gravitas of you, the fact that at that time there were very few personalities in British cycling, because it was a very small sport which us youngsters could sort of look up to. And I remember you coming across and everyone knew who you were. And that memory stayed with me forever. And I hope I haven't embarrassed you saying that.
No, not at all. But I do remember that occasion, funny enough, Phil, because I think I was in my with my cap on as president of the CTC, and so I met there with a minister from Coventry, because it was a cyclist memorial service.
And oh, okay. So there would have been a cycle ride from Hartford down there.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Even the minister was on a bike in his front.
And of course, not far from there, we have the FT Bidlake Memorial, which for a lot of people starting out in cycling, they probably wouldn't have any idea who this chap was, but he's basically the father of British time trialling, at least,
totally,
if not club racing.
The highest award you can get is the Bidlake plaque, yeah.
Which you've got.
I have, yes.
So I think I cut you off there just to say it's the FT Bidlake Award, which every so often is presented to someone who the cycling community feel deserves it. So was that a great honour for you?
It was. I was flattered beyond belief. It's came late in life for me, about 3 years ago, I think, no more than three, and they presented it to me. The committee is it meets not necessarily once a year, but when there's somebody they feel within the sport and the pastime who's done a lot to forward the sport and pastime. And I was very lucky. I'm very honoured too. They gave it to me at an event in the February, or about 3 years ago.
It was a Hard Riders, wasn't it, event?
It was.
The North Road Hard Riders, which of course
only
is a
about
very...
3 miles from my house. So
oh, okay.
I didn't have to go too far.
Yeah, okay.
But it was lovely, yeah.
Don't give any more detail around. You'll have people like me turning up on a Sunday.
It's been known. I've been riding in the lanes here with quite famous cyclists who stayed the night at my home. And one of them was the great German cyclist, Jens Vogt.
Oh, wow.
And I said, Jens, don't stay in a hotel in London. Come up to my house. I'll introduce you to my local pub. And so he came up and we went for a ride. He said, oh, you ride very well occasionally on the, you are very active. So I said, thank you, Jens. But then there was two club cyclists rode the other way down the lane and they almost rode into each other and imploded because they had a double take on Jens riding past them in the opposite direction with me. And then it was on Twitter saying, did we see Jens Voigt in the Bayford-Harford lanes this morning with you? I wrote back and said, yes, why didn't you tell us? I said, well, if I'd have told you, I think we'd have probably had 3,000 people rocking up and we were out for a private ride. We were commentating in London on the Tour of Spain.
Do you find when you go for a bike ride, Phil, on your own, that people, when they work out who you are, they just want to burn you off? Happen a lot?
And it's not difficult to do these days. But and because now they tend to catch me from behind, they don't recognise me, they always shout encouragement and I don't... If I say, thanks, guys, then they know the voice. Then they all stop and say, hey, this is Phil Liggett. Let's all have a chat. Oh, dear. The last thing I can do is talk and ride a bike anymore.
Now, one of the great things about your commentaries, and particularly back in the days with Paul, is the fact that you do bring a lot more to it. As I mentioned earlier, it's not just about the cycling. And I know that you mentioned the bird watching. Conservation is a very big thing for you, isn't it? And
yes.
Almost the situation, environmental situation the globe is, it's something which you are sort of from time to time outspoken, not in an aggressive way, but you do have opinions about that, don't you?
Yes, I do. I think it's very important. My life was to have begun with animals, as it did indeed at Chester Zoo. And because I never got the breaks or the training, I couldn't progress it in that direction. So I went and became a cyclist. From that came my job. But I never lost sight of what I wanted most, and that was the natural habitat and the countryside, which we must never lose. Because to imagine Britain without bird sounds, well, what is the point of living? There's nothing when you walk outside to hear or listen to. And our birds are in great danger in many, many ways, mostly through loss of habitat. Our world, and I'm guessing you're alluding to this, but... there are simply too many people in the world. The world cannot sustain an explosion in population. And it demands more space, it demands more housing. It has to have an end. It can't go on because the world will end. Believe me, the world will end. I won't live through those times, obviously. And maybe you won't yourself, Phil. But
thanks.
For the generations ahead, for the generations ahead, of course, it's a very, very serious problem.
Before we go any further, though, your third choice of music is Paul Young. I think it's very appropriate for a person such as you. You spend all your time travelling in normal times around the world. It's Paul Young, Wherever I Lay My Hat. The reason for this, Phil?
Well, Paul moved in to live in the big manor house next door to my gardener's cottage and stables. He comes from Luton, and he was living for quite a while. He lived here. I used to get up a ladder with him, help him clean his gutters out. His house was very tall, so if he had a head for heights, it wasn't the job to do.
Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Phil, we are really running out of time and the finish line is fast approaching, I have to say. So I really wanted to chat to you, though, because I know it's something very dear to your heart, helping rhinos. You know, why should we?
Well, we should help rhinos because South Africa, in particular with the situation, but the rhino is the iconic animal of the African continent, south of the equator. And it's fast disappearing. It's being killed at the rate of nearly 3 per day for absolutely no reason at all, because the horn, which is transported illegally out of the country across to either Vietnam or China, does nothing. They say it has all these strange powers, be they aphrodisiac or cures cancer. It does absolutely nothing. It's like chewing your fingernail at high speed. And a rhino horn can be worth $200,000 to the people at the far end. The poor guy that goes out and poaches it, he's got no money to start with, and he'll be paid enough for what would be the equivalent of a year's earning. So he's prepared to die for that. And where I bought a house on a big range on the edge of the Kruger Park in 2003. And what I realized, I bought up what I wanted was a holiday home and an escape, and I'd moved into a war zone. So I'm very involved in saving the rhinos now, and I do a lot of work. And thankfully, we're getting rewards. But this year, we are so far to lose our first rhino, which has been unheard of throughout the time I've spent there. So I hope we're winning the battle. And again, this is another strange spin-off of COVID, because all the airspace is closed in South Africa, hence my delay in getting back home to Hertfordshire. But because the airspace is closed, there's no exit for the poachers with their illegal contraband. And so the poaching has eased back quite a lot. I've seen rhino. I've taken famous people from soccer teams to come and see the rhino in the wild, and they just started crying, because to see a rhino, a black or a white rhino, come out of the bush running straight at you, it's sensational. They are very, very soft animals. They're not aggressive. They're shy. They talk. We must not lose what is our world. And certainly not for the most ridiculous reason of a rhino horn, which is keratin, having any form of magical powers. It's quite ridiculous.
It is. And there's nothing really anyone can add to what you said. You said it so well there, Phil. Phil, can you believe it? The finish line is fast approaching. I'm almost going to do a sprint commentary there with Phil Liggett, but I daren't. No one can do it quite like Phil. I just wanted to ask you, my favourite Tour de France ever, and I think your commentary, along with Paul's, probably made it so, 1989.
Yeah. Yes, it's a long time ago now, but I'm asked this question almost every day of my life, which is my favourite Tour de France. I've done 47. And it is 89. It was finally won by Greg LeMond, but on that very last day, it had been a great race, first of all. Everybody had... they'd thrown the yellow jersey between Le Mans and Laurent Fignon. So when we came to the last stage, which was a race against the clock, a time trial from the Palace of Versailles to the Champs-Élysées, 24 kilometres. Laurent Fignon was leading the Tour de France by 50 seconds. Now, in 15 miles, the time trial, it's unlikely you can recover 50 seconds against a top time trialist like Laurent Fignon. And so I opened the programme, which was recorded to tape and satellited to London for the afternoon show. And I said to Paul Sherwin, well, Paul, who's going to win the Tour de France? And Paul said, well, it's got to be Laurent Fignon. He's a good time trialist. He lives in Paris. He's French. And 50 seconds, it's a big ask for Greg LeMond to catch him now. So I looked back at the camera and I said, well, I think Greg LeMond's going to win the Tour. And I think he'll win by 6 seconds. And we stopped the tape. Paul and I jumped in the car, head down to Champs-Élysées for a coffee. The tape is satellited to London. Now we go to the race at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and we're live. So that little introduction has been played out. We're now looking at the race. Paul had it worked out to perfection that Le Mans had to gain, I think it was 1.2 seconds a kilometre to win the Tour. And it was working out. He liked his maths, Paul. So we're commentating on it. And Le Mans is clearly gaining all of the way. So Fignon is the last rider to start. In other words, he's chasing Greg by 2 or 3 minutes behind him. And Greg Le Mans comes down the Champs-Élysées, gets the best time on the board. He's jumping all over the place, and we now know what he's done. So we now know what Fignon must cross the line in to win the race. And that time expired 200 metres before the finishing line. And I remember blurting out, I don't believe this. Greg LeMond has just won the Tour by 8 seconds. To which the producer, who was in London, the executive producer, put the key over in my ear and said, next time, Liggett, get it bloody right. To which I burst into tears. I had Le Monde with tears of happiness leaping in front of the cameras by where I was. I had Fignon lying on the floor sobbing his heart out. And there was me in tears as well. What a fine trio we made. But it was a great tour. And it was always going to end like that. Because it had been like that the whole tour.
Indeed it was. Phil Liggett, I cannot believe it. You're in tears. I'm almost in tears. I have just spent an hour in the company of the Voice of Cycling. We may not have been able to bring you anything to do with the Tour de France this year on Cambridge 105 Radio, but at least we brought you the Voice of Cycling. Phil Liggett, thank you so much.